Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Better living through chemistry was the chemical giant DuPont's ad slogan back in the day. Then it was the EPA to the rescue when we realized modern chemistry could also mean dead rivers, sick Americans, and more. Today, it's a new EPA, says its new chief, Scott Pruitt, and that extends to toxic chemicals. There's been a battle royal over loosening EPA oversight. Loosening is winning. But it doesn't mean that chemicals aren't still there around us. This hour, On Point, toxic chemicals and the new EPA. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you assume somebody at the Environmental Protection Agency is looking out for you when it comes to toxic chemicals in our environment? Are you sure? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we'll look at the EPA stopping scientists from speaking at a climate conference. But first, toxic chemicals. Joining me from Washington is Eric Lipton, investigative reporter for the New York Times. His big story headlined, Why the EPA Shifted on Toxic Chemicals, an industry insider helps call the shots, ran in the paper this weekend. You can find a link at our website, onpointradio.org. Eric Lipton, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What's at the heart of this story?
The heart is essentially a choice as to how the federal government should define risk. When you go to the home improvement store and there's a paint stripper on the shelf, and this paint stripper is really effective at removing paint quickly without much effort or labor on your part, but at the same point, this paint stripper could potentially kill you if you don't properly ventilate the room. What's the role of the federal government to decide that the benefit of the paint stripper versus the risk that it might kill you, where does the federal government come down? And that sort of balance is in play right now at the EPA.
Why in play right now?
Because the EPA has essentially been, you know, the leadership of the EPA has shifted in a way in which they think risk should be more narrowly defined, and that the benefits that products bring to the American society is something that need to be weighed as and looking at, you know, did the person follow what's said on the label, and how many people were actually injured by that product, and so the standards by which they're determining what is safe and unsafe has shifted in a way that is disturbing to some of the folks that have been at the EPA for a long time.
Give us a more specific idea of the chemicals and risks that we're talking about here.
I mean, some of the other chemicals, for example, is a chemical that's used in dry cleaners, and it has another chemical is something that's used in degreasing metal parts. There's something that's used in violet, the color violet, that's used in paper and as an additive on all kinds of products to create a coloring. Across your tool shed, these chemicals are there, and in all kinds of products that you buy, and particularly in industrial uses. But the problem is that the question is not only are they on your shelf, but oftentimes when chemicals are widely used in society, they end up in drinking water in small amounts because they get into the environment and then they contaminate drinking water supplies. And then, like dioxin, for example, 1,4-dioxin has shown up in low levels in drinking water. Although, of course, it's not used in drinking water, but it's just because it's so commonly used in many manufacturing settings, it gets into the environment, it ends up in reservoirs and then in trace amounts in drinking water.
I want to get to the battle here and how it played out, but it's also legacy chemicals, right? Those that are not sold anymore but are still very much in our environment?
Right. For example, there's a product which was just about in every household in the United States, Teflon. It was in pans, Gore-Tex gloves, and Gore-Tex jackets. It's called PFOA. It was one of those miracle products that the American ingenuity created out of, you know, the space age. We could do better. We could make you warm even though your coat is thin. Your pan does not stick. You could make eggs and it will never stick. Well, that brought, you know, tremendous advancements in society from the 1950s. But at the same time, it was causing health consequences. And even DuPont, which was the manufacturer of PFOA and made, you know, unknown amounts of money selling that product, eventually realized that product was having health consequences. And they agreed to remove it voluntarily from use. So when you go buy a nonstick pan, it no longer has PFOA. And Gore-Tex gloves and Gore-Tex products no longer have it. But the problem is that even though that chemical is no longer in products that are being sold and you can buy today, it's still everywhere in the environment. It various amounts of it had spilled in various places, and it trace amounts are in water supplies. And also there are millions of products still in use in commerce in the United States of people who have old pans or old products. And so the legacy of that chemical still needs to be evaluated and its toxicity when the EPA decides how to regulate it. For example, is the health consequences so severe that they should retroactively remove that product from the marketplace? Or is it okay that they're not severe enough that you can leave those legacy products out there? And that's a question that the EPA is no longer going to really be considering as much because of the changes that were made by the Trump and Pruitt appointees to narrow the scope of the toxic chemical reviews. Legacy chemicals will no longer be given as much consideration. And PFOA was specifically cited by the Office of Water Safety at the EPA and said, we're concerned with this change that you made because it's removing legacy chemicals from consideration.
Now, I want to be clear that these chemicals can have stark health consequences. I wish you'd enumerate some of them. And there's references in your work here to childhood developmental issues, to cancer, and more.
Yeah, I mean, these are things that kill people. I mean, methylene chloride is one of the most serious of the threats of the toxic chemicals that is under review by the EPA right now. And I mentioned it earlier. It's in paint strippers, and it is widely available, and it's sold for both commercial and consumer use. And literally dozens of people have died by using this product. There was a 21-year-old young man in Tennessee. He was using it as a stripper on a bathtub. He was, you know, just using the product as he thought the instructions suggested, he was overcome by the fumes. He went into cardiac arrest and he died. His family is left trying to understand how it's possible that a product that can be bought at a home improvement store could cause the death of their 21-year-old son.
Kill you fast. I guess some might kill you slowly.
Yes, others, you know, are causing reproductive disorders. Others are causing cancers and kidney and liver issues. The question really is just, you know, how severe is the risk? How much exposure do you need to have? Is the chemical used in a controlled environment in which, if you follow the, you know, is it used in an industrial setting only where you would expect that the employees are properly following the rules, or is it used in a consumer setting where you can't have the expectation that a person is going to follow what it says on the label and they still shouldn't die? You shouldn't be able to die because you buy something in a store and use it at home. I mean, you would expect the government is not going to allow that product to be sold.
Policy has changed on this just in the last few months as the EPA came under the Trump administration. That might surprise some people because there was pretty potent legislation only in 2016 that I think people anticipated would do more to help us understand the toxic chemical risks in our environment. What happened?
Well, what happened was that the chemical industry and the environmental community, as well as the Republicans and the Democrats in Congress, reached a point where they realized that the confidence of the American public in chemicals was being undermined. And so Target and Walmart were taking products off their shelves because of consumer concern about their safety. This includes, for example, certain chemicals in plastics, which were commonly found in children's products.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the formaldehyde in flooring. And, you know, as consumers, we were hearing headlines about this, even though the government was not acting quickly enough to address these concerns. And so what happened was that all of a sudden Target and Walmart become the de facto chemical regulators in the United States because the government is so slow in reaching a consensus as to how to act, that the chemical industry itself was concerned that consumers' confidence in their products were being undermined. So they decided to support new legislation, which was passed in 2016. And the environmentalists and the chemical industry embraced it. And it was bipartisan. Incredibly, Congress actually passed something. And Obama signed it in June of 2016. So that's the law that is in the process of being enacted. And to some extent, although it was passed in 2016, it's only now in the Trump administration being implemented.
And the implementation is what we're talking about here. Here's a little sound from last year. Congress passing that bipartisan bill to toughen up the oversight of toxic chemicals. This was Congressman John Shimkus, Republican from Illinois, first introducing the legislation, the Chemical Safety Act.
This is a sweeping legislation, Mr. Speaker, with monumental benefits for virtually every man, woman, and child in the United States. The culmination of a multi-year, multi-Congress effort, this legislation on the floor today will mark the first consequential update of the Toxic Substances Control Act, or TSCA, in 40 years.
The Toxic Substances Control Act, and then we come to implementation, and that's the rub, Eric Lipton. This is where your reporting really kicks into gear. Who was brought in to lead the implementation of this by the Trump administration?
So, in January of 2016, the law required a year after the law was passed that the EPA had to adopt final rules that would set up the risk evaluation process and the prioritization process. There are tens of thousands of chemicals out there. You have to decide which ones to evaluate first and then what standards to use as you evaluate them. So in January, the Obama administration, as it's going out the door, the law demanded that it do this, it proposed standards that would be used to evaluate these chemicals. And so it just didn't have enough time. It only had been 6 months since the law was finalized to put those rules into place. So then the baton is passed to the Trump administration, and Pruitt comes in, and he names a new leadership that's going to oversee toxic chemicals. And the person he brings in is named Dr. Nancy Beck, who John Graham is going to join us here, knows quite well. And Nancy Beck is a very well-respected toxicologist who has a PhD from University of Washington. And she had previously worked in the past 5 or so years at the American Chemistry Council, which is the largest trade association representing the chemical industry. Go ahead, you were going to ask a question.
I just wanted to clarify what that was. Got it. So right. they represent the interests of the chemical industry, and she brought a new attitude.
And she had spent the prior couple of years essentially, pushing Congress to do things that were in the chemical industry's interest. And she had actually written, testified, and sent comments as to how she wanted these rules changed in a way that would lessen the burden on the chemical industry.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about toxic chemicals, the EPA, and whether we are now being protected, whether the EPA is on the job here or not. Eric Lipton is with us, investigative reporter for the New York Times. He's been looking deeply into how the EPA has implemented legislation around toxic chemicals in the Trump administration. You're hearing the beginning of this story. We're going to hear much more, and you can join us in this hour. Are you confident that the job is being done here? Has the oversight been too tough, too restrictive in the past? What level of risk assessment do you want the EPA to be doing about the chemicals in our environment? Maybe right there in the home improvement store, maybe right there in your home already. Donald Trump brought in Scott Pruitt as the EPA administrator, chief there, and Scott Pruitt made no bones about the fact that he wanted to bring change with him. Here he was in February, as the new administration was taking shape, speaking at the Conservative Political Action Conference, promising a new way of doing business, saying Americans can have it both ways, protect the environment, but cut down on the rules and give more power to the states to regulate. Federalism.
The EPA is going to be a partner to make sure that we advance environmental issues and restore the notion of federalism that's insistent in our environmental statutes. So process, rule of law, and cooperative federalism, that's going to be the heart of how we do business at the EPA. The future ain't what it used to be. at the EPA.
The future ain't what it used to be at the EPA. Eric Lipton, what did that mean when it came to toxic chemicals in this implementation?
What it means, again, is it comes back to sort of how you define risk. And he's bringing in a team that takes a more skeptical approach. And so both Nancy Beck and another a toxicologist named Michael Dorfson, whose vote is before the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee tomorrow, and then he would have to go to the full Senate for confirmation, although, in fact, Michael Dorfson is already working at the EPA because Pruitt has given him a temporary post while he's awaiting confirmation. But both Beck and Dorfson are from the school that takes a more critical look at risk declarations and thinks that the EPA needs to kind of redo the way it processes evaluations of risk. And, I mean, so for example, let's make this more practical. I mean, this is not a TSCA. This has to do with a separate but related law that regulates pesticides. But there's a pesticide known as chlorpyrifos, which is one of the most widely used pesticides in agriculture, you know, in the United States. It's used on apples, almonds, all kinds of fruits, not citrus fruits, mostly fruits from places like California and Oregon and Washington. And the EPA's scientists and environmental health experts had concluded that chlorpyrifos was a significant, you know, that they could not definitively say that this was not a threat to particularly the developmental childhood developmental problems it was causing, because it was being applied heavily in agricultural areas, and the problem is particularly among children who work in those agricultural communities and were being exposed to the pesticide. And there was research that suggested that there was developmental disabilities among these children. And so the EPA scientists decided, you know what, it's time to ban chlorpyrifos. We should take it off the market. It's too risky.
Yep.
We don't know. And then Pruitt comes in and he instructs the personnel at the EPA, Wendy Hamnett, to reverse the order banning the pesticide and to allow it to continue to be used. That happens in March of 2017, overriding the scientific conclusions of the EPA's own staff. That's a pretty practical impact of a chemical that was on its way to being removed from the marketplace that now is going to continue to be widely used across the United States in fruits and vegetables that we all buy every day.
What was the industry's position here? I mean, after all, they supported the legislation that went through in 2016, but then you get to 2017, and they're in their hammer and tongs with people who recently worked right among them, like Dr. Nancy Beck, steering very hard here. What was their concern? What do they want?
In this case, Dow Chemical, which is the manufacturer of chlorpyrifos primarily, and others in the agricultural industry, they pointed to what they considered to be flaws. Again, as we talked about the risk process, they pointed to flaws in the determination of risk, and they thought that the EPA had not sufficiently proven that this is really a developmental disability threat to children. And in fact, the USDA as well had raised some similar questions. The USDA has a different role in terms of agriculture. I mean, it is to some extent more of a promoter of agriculture than a regulator of agriculture. So, but it as well had raised these questions. So Dow Chemical said the evidence is not conclusive. It's not time to ban this chemical. The EPA essentially decided to study it more. I mean, that is the most popular move on behalf of the industry. It's like, study it more, delay, study.
Why? Because risk assessment is costly to them? It cuts into their profits? What?
Well, I mean, if Dow Chemical lost chlorpyrifos, that was a major product for it. And also, it would be a major impact for farmers, because it is a very popular pesticide. And they did not want to lose that pesticide because it's effective at reducing, you know, threats to their crops. So there were costs, you know, both financially to the company that makes it and to the farmers that use it, but there were benefits as well, which presumably was fewer children with developmental disabilities, and that was a risk determination that the EPA made under Pruitt, and under, you know, that which was that we will keep this product on the market.
So Nancy Beck came in from the American Chemistry Council, the Chemistry Trade Association, to head up this effort, and she found her counterpart in the EPA, a career EPA scientist, Wendy Hamnett, who you just mentioned, with a very different perspective on what ought to happen here. Describe that sort of clash of views, Eric.
Sure. Well, I mean, both of them care a lot about science, and I've never met Nancy Beck. I wish that I could have, but the EPA would not allow me to speak to her, despite weeks of efforts to try to get an interview with her. But they both, you know, care about science and care about public health. But again, you know, Wendy's philosophy, and I've met Wendy spent many hours talking to her and interviewing her and getting to understand her worldview, and that is that you can never be 100% certain when it comes to toxic chemicals, because you can't feed people, you know, methylene chloride and see how long it takes for them to to die from methylene chloride. You have to do studies that try to assess the threat. And so because you can't be 100% certain, you have to look at studies and evaluate them based on how reliable they are, but you can't expect certitude. And Nancy Beck is more demanding and rigorous in her science and is more willing to push aside scientific results if they aren't as conclusive. And the result is that there are fewer that reach the conclusion that there's real risk, which necessitates regulatory action.
Who won this battle? Who lost? And how? When?
Well, right now, clearly the school of Nancy Beck and Michael Dorson is winning, and the risk assessment process is shifting in a fundamental way at the EPA that is more significant than at any point since at least the Reagan administration.
So, what were the specific steps that meant victory for them, and what did it end up meaning to this long-term EPA scientist, Wendy Hamnett?
So far, because the new toxic chemical law is still being implemented and it is just now basically fully in effect, and what they have done so far is they changed the risk evaluation and prioritization rules in a way that really upset a number of the career folks at the EPA, because they narrowed the uses in which will be evaluated before they determine toxicity for a chemical. Instead of using all uses, they're now going to only use certain uses. For example, PFOA and legacy uses will now be removed from a required reviews. And they also put in certain definitions that will allow the chemical industry to challenge the terms like best available science. It sounds very simple. You'd want to be able to use best available science when you decide what a risk is. But that is a term that the industry wanted, those terms, so it could challenge determinations of threats. And so now they're beginning the process of taking up the first 10 chemicals and deciding if they're risky enough that they need to be restricted or potentially even banned. So we are going to see this roll out over the years to come. And the people who the rules that they're using to make these determinations and the decisions they're going to make are going to be under this new environment, which is led by Nancy Beck and Michael Dorson, presumably once he's confirmed.
And Wendy Hamnett, who fought for years for close oversight of these chemicals, is out. She's retiring. Michael Dorson, who you've described a couple of times, you write, a toxicologist who has spent the last two decades as a consultant helping businesses fight EPA restrictions on the use of potentially toxic compounds. He, with Nancy Beck, now empowered.
Yes, and Wendy Hamnett decided that after 38 years and her entire career was spent at the EPA, she left law school in 1979 and took her first job at the EPA. And September 1st of 2017, she retired. She'd had enough. She'd done her part. She felt she'd become essentially irrelevant and that her voice was no longer being listened to, so she'd left. And so Nancy Beck is essentially, right now sort of handling most of the matters, and Michael Dorson is also, but Michael Dorson, as soon as he's confirmed, will be her replacement.
You describe Dr. Beck, you see, was seen as an enemy of scientists and risk assessors at the EPA, willing to challenge the validity of their studies and impose her own judgment. In your report here. Eric Lipton with the New York Times standby calls for you, and then we've got some perspectives on all this. Melissa in Youngstown, Ohio. Melissa, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I apologize for the fussy baby in the background.
No problem. No problem, Melissa.
I just basically wanted to comment that I think we've seen through all the appointees in the Trump administration that they're more interested in protecting big business. They're more interested in deregulation to allow the money to flow in than they are perhaps interested in protecting consumers or protecting people. Talking about manufactured chemicals, but also when you look at the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, the things that were put in place that have since been rolled back, allowing dumping into streams and rivers and waterways. And it just really seems like there's very little interest in, looking out for our children, basically, because they're going to be paying the price for this.
I mean, I have to ask you about that, Melissa, because we've got the soundtrack of your child right there very clearly. But we're talking here about potential developmental disabilities in children emerging from the use of these chemicals. How cautious would you like the EPA to be?
I would like to see the things put in place. I would like to see them put back. I feel like the very idea that, it's not that much, or, we haven't studied it, or, oh, the science, you know, this study wasn't done right, so maybe it's not as harmful. I just have a hard time buying that. And I feel like, you know, chemicals are obviously everywhere. But how long did it take to see the long-term effects? And
yeah.
Something new that comes on the market, how is that affecting us in 20 years?
Yeah. Melissa, I appreciate your call. We are looking at the EPA wrestling with all this and how they're doing that in the Trump administration. And it's different. Greg in Medford, Massachusetts. Greg, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say I read Mr. Lipton's piece in the Times this past week, and I was, mesmerized, amazed, shocked, scared. I don't know how else to describe it. I forwarded it to several friends of mine, one who was in an e-law meeting out west, and he said perfect timing, can circulate it as much as possible. But the thing is this, it's like, Mr. Lipton, you're a hero, man. You dig up stuff like this, and it's overwhelmingly important. But what does someone like me and other people that are concerned about stuff like this and a multitude of other regulatory changes in variety of ways that are being kind of done in the darkness of night, we all know it's important. We all know there's a million and one of them, to exaggerate a bit, but too many of them. How do we go about, number one, finding out, I don't know, more about them, aside from, you know, great journalists like you, which that was a heck of a piece that took a lot
yep,
of time.
Sure was.
And then what, if anything, can we do about it? I mean, most people would be concerned about something like this, even people who work in the chemical industry that have kids.
Yeah. Eric Lipton, what do you say? I mean, Greg's amazed and freaked out. But what do you do?
I mean, first of all, to me, the most important thing I can do as a reporter is transparency and bring visibility to these types of actions and to make sure that it's widely known and that it isn't simply happening in, you know, in behind the scenes in closed offices. And then, I mean, secondly, I mean, I think that, you know, in the history, the course of American history, the pendulum is always swinging. And, you know, during the Obama administration, perhaps you had an administration that was, you could argue, at times excessively protective. And now we have an administration that you could argue is less protective. And you know, these things tend to moderate over the long term. And that's at least something that you can keep into consideration as your concern grows about what's happening right now. And it is also true. And as Nancy Beck would say, although she's never spoken to me, and she cares about public health. And it's not as if they are simply going to do things that are in the financial interest of the chemical industry, but they are going to take a more critical eye to the cost of those things in a way that others would see as irresponsible. And so it really is a question of the balance of risk versus benefit, and it has shifted fundamentally in this administration, and it is something that we as the New York Times are committed to focusing on and bringing light to in any place that's happening across the federal government, and there's a lot of reporters working on that. It's costly work, but it's important work.
John Graham joins us right now from Bloomington, Indiana. He's dean of the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University. He was in the U.S. Office of Management and Budget in the George W. Bush administration, overseeing federal regulatory policy. John Graham, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
You hear the net effect of Eric Lipton's reporting on our last caller, you know, sort of freaked out by it and really worried. Your work has been more in line with the perspective of Nancy Beck. How do you see what's unfolding here, John?
Well, I have to be honest and say that a number of the appointees in the Trump administration have made me nervous or uncomfortable. But I was thrilled to hear the news that Nancy Beck had been given this a very important assignment on
Why?
The implementation of this new law. Here is an undergraduate in biology from Cornell University, a PhD in the environmental health from the University of Washington, board certified in toxicology, active member in the Society for Toxicology, more experience in the government than in the industry, despite, I think, the tone of some of Eric's reporting. She's really spent a lot of time inside the government working with toxicologists and scientists at different agencies. What a wonderful person to be
but
in the role
But the portrayal here, and you read it, is that she's almost very consistently rolling back the tougher assessment of risk in favor of positions that the industries would find more amenable.
Right. But what Eric also said, and I thought this was very perceptive, he said from Nancy's point of view, she thinks she's actually protecting public health, and here's the reason why. There are thousands of chemicals out there, hundreds of thousands of existing uses. We're not going to be able to go after and regulate all of these places. EPA can't be doing all of that. What EPA can do is focus on the most significant risks. And what Dr. Beck is doing is focusing the attention of government and industry on those chemicals and specific uses of chemicals that present the highest risk to children, to adults, and for various diseases.
Eric Lipton?
So in the long run, yep. her approach yep. may end up saving more lives than the approach that they're taking in Europe, which is to regulate all chemicals and all uses.
Eric, in a word, do you buy that?
It's an argument.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about toxic chemicals, the EPA, and whether we are now being protected, whether the right priorities in how we're being protected from toxic chemicals are being implemented at the EPA under the Trump administration. We're going to talk in a few minutes about three scientists who were supposed to be speaking at a climate change conference this week. EPA said no to that. But first, toxic chemicals. Eric Lipton's been looking deeply into what's going on at the EPA for the New York Times. He's written up a big piece on this. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. John Graham is with us from Bloomington, Indiana, Dean of the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University. He was in the Office of Management and Budget under George W. Bush and had a front row seat on a whole lot of this. Nancy Beck was brought in by the Trump administration to look at this. She has her own record. John Graham is very laudatory of it, and you hear him saying she's prioritizing net effect positive for public health because you go after the worst cases first. But there is a track record here. Eric Lipton writes about it in his piece. Back in 2007, the National Academy of Sciences looked at a draft policy that Nancy Beck helped write. She's now in charge here, proposing she wanted much stricter controls on the way the government evaluates risk. The National Academy of Sciences called her suggestions oversimplified, fundamentally flawed, recommended her proposal be withdrawn. And the House Committee on Science and Technology came in here as well, looked at it. Their report, hey, here's the headline, Suppression of environmental science by the Bush administration's Office of Management and Budget. They wrote in 2009 before describing Dr. Beck's actions there. Eric Lipton reports. John Graham is in Bloomington, Indiana. Robert Sussman joins us right now from Washington. He's former deputy administrator of the EPA under President Clinton, senior policy counsel to the EPA administrator under President Obama. Robert Sussman, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom.
What do you make of this battle that Eric describes in his big piece?
Well, I'm very concerned about the change at the EPA that Eric describes in his article. And one of the most troubling things about it is that Congress amended this 40-year-old law, the Toxic Substances Control Act, because of a long history of paralysis and inaction by EPA. Including a failure to regulate more than just a handful of chemicals over a 40-year period. And so the goal of the new law was to produce action, to evaluate more chemicals, to address more risks, to impose more regulatory restrictions on chemicals. And the folks I work with in the environmental community have felt and do feel that there are important tools in this new law that can be very effective. But unfortunately, what we're seeing under the Trump administration is a return to the type of paralysis and inaction that prevailed for a 40-year period, and that's very troubling. I think we could all stipulate that EPA should be focusing on the most significant risks, as John Graham said. But what we're seeing now under Nancy Beck and Scott Pruitt is a failure to address the most significant risks. And in that regard, I would point to two of the chemicals that Eric mentioned, trichloroethylene and methylene chloride. The Obama administration proposed to restrict those chemicals, to ban their use in certain high exposure consumer products. There is a very extensive scientific record which supports those proposals. These are chemicals that have been studied over two decades or longer. EPA has evaluated their risks on multiple occasions. EPA's work has been peer-reviewed by independent scientists. And yet, what we are hearing is that these rules will be put on the back burner. My question to John and my question to Nancy is, why aren't we finalizing these rules? If we're interested in public health, if we're interested in addressing the most significant risks, can't we act on these chemicals? And if we can't act on these chemicals, are we going to act on anything?
John?
Yes. One of the positive steps I think that's been made is the introduction of some science principles into the way in which EPA will go about doing the risk assessments and risk determinations.
The introduction is as though they had not been there before. I mean, Eric Clifton's reporting describes Nancy Beck as seen as an enemy of scientists.
Right. But you see, the key terms like the weight of the evidence needs to have actual guidelines behind it so that the agency staff and scientists can implement it. And some of that guidance is now being provided in rules that have been finalized at the EPA. So I think there is good progress going. And one of the reasons you need to have that is you've heard a lot in this show about chemicals that cause all these various problems.
Yeah.
If it were that straightforward, I don't think we would be having this issue. What often happens is you have some evidence suggesting there's harm. You have other studies suggesting that there's not harm, and at different doses and different uses. You need good scientific judgment to make a determination in that case. And the weight of the evidence says you look at all of that data, not just the data that's on one side or the other side. I think that's a very positive step that Dr. Beck has introduced into this debate.
Robert Sussman, you've described that as throwing sand in the gears to stop things from going forward.
Well, I did say that, and I think it's correct. There's an assumption here that that EPA has done sloppy, unscientific work over the years, and now they need to be called to account, and they need to be subjected to a degree of scientific rigor that they haven't practiced in the past. And I think that is deeply misleading. There is a large body of guidance on risk assessment and toxicology that EPA has developed over the years, which describes how risk assessments should be done. It's been through a peer review process. It's been through a public comment process. And the assessments that EPA has done on the two chemicals that I have mentioned have been approved through peer review by independent scientists, including the National Academy of Sciences. So I think the work that EPA has done historically is very much in the mainstream. And I think the demand for a higher level of rigor, frankly, is an effort to slow down decision making, slow down risk assessment, argue that the glass is half empty rather than half full, and at the end of the day, create a situation where we continue to study chemicals that we know a lot about for another 10 or 15 years and nothing happens.
Jennifer in Nashville, thank you for calling, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much. I absolutely love your show. I'm a fertility nurse, and I'm very passionate about endocrine disruption, and I believe strongly that the way the questions are being asked is wrong. We can't look at endocrine disruption from the same old perspective of the dose equals the poison, because very tiny, tiny doses of these chemicals all around us are causing infertility, cancer, developmental delays, blah, 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 blah. We all know. You know, you hear people say, everything gives you cancer. I, as a mother, defy that. I do not want a future like that for my children, and I'm very upset with this deregulation.
Do you feel properly protected at this point, Jennifer?
Absolutely not. My protection is in my own hands, and we are surrounded by all of these potential harms for our families, and it's just completely out of control.
That's a pretty tall order for any individual, but we've heard in this hour about the battle going on with the EPA over exactly how those risks will be monitored, observed, and checked. Jennifer, I appreciate your call from Nashville, or not. I want to thank our guest in this hour, John Graham, at the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University. Mr. Graham, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Robert Sussman, out of Washington today, thank you very much for being with us from the Safer Chemicals, Healthy Families Coalition. Thank you for being here, Mr. Sussman.
My pleasure.
And Eric Lipton, who did the work for the New York Times. You can link to his big piece at our website. Eric Lipton in Washington, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
In a moment, EPA climate scientists banned by their bosses from speaking at a climate conference. This is On Point. Yesterday, three climate scientists who work for the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, were scheduled to speak at a conference in Rhode Island on the impact of climate change on the Narragansett Bay estuary. It didn't happen. To explain why, Scott Waldman joins me from Washington. He covers climate policy and science for E&E News' Climate Wire. Scott Waldman, thanks very much for being with us. What happened here?
Thanks for having me, Tom. There was a report that was going to be released yesterday at the conference. It was a three-year report, about 500 pages, and it just looked at about 24 aspects of the bay and the larger watershed and the health, which actually has improved in recent years and recent decades because of the state's partnership with the EPA and its science. And as with any of these sort of reports looking at, you know, the health of coastal areas, certainly climate change plays a significant role there. In this case, there were three separate EPA scientists that were going to speak that worked on the report. One of the keynote speakers was actually going to address climate change in her speech, and they were sort of dialed back at the last minute by the EPA with very little explanation other than that this wasn't an EPA conference, so they weren't supposed to speak.
Dialed back sounds soft. I mean, they're not appearing at all, are they?
They were allowed to attend, but no, they were not. They were not speaking.
And this was announced by John Conkus. This is an EPA spokesman, former Trump campaign operative in Florida. Was there any explanation for why they were not permitted to speak?
No, just that. And this is part of a larger trend at the EPA right now and just going after climate science. Mr. Pruitt has, of course, sort of dismissed the mainstream view, which is that humans are warming the planet at an unprecedented pace, mostly through the burning of fossil fuels. And he's looked to basically weaken the effect of climate science on EPA regulation wherever he can.
The keynote speaker, Autumn Oskowski, a research ecologist at the EPA's National Health and Environmental Effects Research Laboratory, Atlantic Ecology Division in Rhode Island. Do we know what she intended to say?
I don't know the whole speech. I haven't seen it. I don't think she's released it, but certainly I think climate change was going to be a key feature of her speech and the way that it affects, you know, this estuary.
And there was an afternoon panel titled The Present and Future Biological Implications of Climate Change. And there again, two EPA scientists pulled out of that. Do we have any idea what they intended to say and will not now be heard on?
No, but again, all these, when you're looking at the health of any sort of estuary, any sort of coastal area, climate change is always going to be a part of that. Sea level rise is affecting all of these areas. Ocean acidification is affecting the shellfish and other, you know, aquatic life there. So I don't think you can talk about the health of the Narragansett Bay or the Chesapeake Bay or any of these key estuaries in our country without addressing climate change. And that was clearly, as they look at sort of all of the larger picture there of the largest estuary in New England, that was going to be a key part of their speech because it's scientifically, it's just simply an important part of the equation as to what's been changing these areas.
I'm reading here from John King. King is a professor of oceanography at the University of Rhode Island, chairs the Science Advisory Committee on the Narragansett Bay Estuary Program. And he's quoted here saying it's definitely a blatant example of the scientific censorship we all suspected was going to start being enforced at EPA. Is that a consensus view of what's going on here, Scott?
I think critics are starting to increasingly sound the alarm. Certainly, they always have since the beginning of this administration on climate science. But just last week, I reported on some changes to EPA websites. Some information related to climate change was taken down in April. It's now come back, but the word climate has been scrubbed from most of the pages. There were plans on there of states and their climate change mitigation programs. Those have been buried, so they're nearly impossible to find on the EPA website, or they've still been removed. So certainly critics are pointing to that. They're pointing to what's happening here at this conference as sort of a growing pattern, and they're raising alarm that, you know, if the EPA is not going to regulate greenhouse gases, if the EPA is not going to tell people how they're being affected by climate change and the dangers of that, then who is tasked with that role?
And I guess it's not just about speaking up or speaking out, and this is for EPA scientists. This study program in Rhode Island is part of a national program, about $26 million, the National Estuary Program, funds 28 state-based estuary programs. Scott Pruitt's proposed budget for 2018 would eliminate that program. So it's not just speaking up. I guess it's the work itself that's been put in question here.
That's right. It's the study. And again, you know, here just outside of D.C., of course, is the beautiful Chesapeake Bay, which has had significant increase in its health in recent years. And there are, through the Sea Grant program, there are state researchers working with federal researchers to study, you know, how that affects crabs, how that affects oysters, important part of the economy in this region. And that program, too, was proposed for cut, for elimination by the Trump administration. There's still budget wrangling going on in Washington, so its ultimate fate has yet to be determined, and there's people that are hopeful that it's going to come back. But still, you know, the actual research itself is being targeted in a broad sector of programs that are funded by the EPA and on which EPA scientists work.
Scott, these scientists had already contributed substantially to this 400-page report coming out on the Narragansett Bay. What's the point? If they've done that, why not let them speak?
That you have to ask the EPA. The report itself did come out. The information is out. They just weren't allowed to present. That's certainly EPA.
Gives a sense of priorities, certainly what the EPA wants to communicate or not communicate, or have its scientists communicate or not communicate right there in Rhode Island. Scott Waldman covers climate policy and science for E&E News' Climate Wire. He joined us from Washington. Scott, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us today. You know, you can always continue this conversation online at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. You can get the On Point podcast at our website. Tons of great shows there. Easy to pull down wherever you get your podcasts. On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.